Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Good morning again and welcome. My guest today, Betty Slade, is an author, a columnist, and an artist. For decades, Betty has painted for interior decorators, owned a signature gallery, displayed artwork in several elite galleries, and much more. She has written over 600 articles for the Pagosa Springs Sun newspaper in her weekly column, The Artist's Lane. Recently, Becky released Taming Wild Hearts, a Western drama mystery romance novel. Good morning, Betty. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for inviting me.
Betty, thank you for coming on the show today. I enjoy interviewing guests who develop their creative talents and they use them for God's glory. Many of my guests express their creativity through writing, but you also have strong ties to the art world. So it's a pleasure to have you on the show today and give listeners a glimpse of what it's like to be an artist as well as a writer.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, it's just in me.
So that's my first question. What motivated you to pursue your artistic abilities as a career? And can you identify any childhood experiences that influenced your desire to be an artist?
Well, I was thinking about it, and the Lord just wired me as an artist. I was making paper doll clothing with Sears and Roebuck catalog models in their underwear, probably back in 1945. But in 1965, my husband's dad, he's a fine arts artist, showed me how to paint, and I was hooked. Some people are designed with dialogue in their heads. My head is just a world of ideas.
Well, that sounds quite fascinating. So were you the type that loved to do, what was it that I enjoyed to do so much? Did you enjoy paint-by-number type things, or were you more creative than that?
You know, I never got into. I did one, and I thought, no, this doesn't work. And since I started with a fine arts artist, you know, that's where I went. I just couldn't paint enough. I was 2 o'clock in the morning in my nightgown with paint on. Once I started, this is what I want to do. So.
Oh my goodness, you and I are polar opposites because I don't think I could draw a straight line with a ruler. And I was never good at coloring within the lines when I was in school. And I did enjoy the paint by numbers because that was actually defined. You have to put this color here to make this picture come out right. So I guess my creative talent does not lean toward the artistic world at all. And I truly admire people who do have that ability in that field.
Well, I don't do anything inside the lines, and that's probably my biggest problem and my biggest challenge in as a Christian, because the box is too small. And to find my path in the art world, because I fell in love with the Lord in 1968, the Holy Spirit came upon me, and it was like I had never been the same. So I've been known as a radical and probably a loose cannon and everything else, but it's like, that's how God wired me.
And I saw where in some of the information that you sent me, Betty, and this falls right in line with the premise of this show, where we talk about people who have experienced a dark time and find their way back into light. And it sounds like you really did go through a dark time. You struggled to find your place and your voice as a Christian artist in the creative world. And tell us about all those feelings that you experienced and how you worked your way through that difficult time.
Well, let me explain what an artist is. We have many ideas and we'll suck the air out of the room, believe me. An artist and writer works from the prophetic gift in the Bible, because I kept saying, where do I belong in the body? Because that was my number one thing. It wasn't so much the secular, but, you know, in the church realm. So I realized early that that means our ideas are not always for the moment, but might be 20 years or 30 years down the way from the average person. So what makes me makes us totally misunderstood? They can't grab onto a new idea. And so I've always been there, and I always said, you know, I was 20 years ahead of my time. My daughter said, Mother, you were doing Pinterest way back in the 80s. And I said, I know. I just didn't have the whereabouts to even know that, you know, what I was doing. So I was painting murals way before they started painting on walls. I always was ahead of my time, and it always was frustrating that nobody was excited because, you know what, it wasn't in them to be excited over something they couldn't get a hold of. So the thing about artists, people are threatened by a creative person, I hate to tell you, but we live on the outside. If you know, we process out loud. We have too many things we want to do, and people get in the way. Artists want one thing, and to be understood. And they are the most misunderstood people in the world. It's crazy because that's where I always wanted to be, is be understood where I was as a Christian and what God had put in me. And as crazy as this crazy world is, we are as crazy as artists, and we still don't fit. And I think we fight the box. And I was thinking about that. We fight the box. And it's just like in the church, in the organized church, or there's a box. And sometimes you don't have the title or the prestige or the position, and yet you've got something so big inside of you. You've got this gift that's so alive, you know, this creative gift. And all, not only that, but the Holy Spirit was so strong from the day I got converted that, you know, I was just sucking in, you know, sucking out the air. We look like rebels, but really we are free thinkers, and we actually move people forward. And that's probably one of the biggest challenges is to get people on board to move forward. You know, artists, well, yes. Writers now, I work with writers, and it's like, do you know what's inside of you? This is powerful. I mean, the power of God is inside of you. Why aren't you writing? When you write, I just tremble inside because you've got something so important to say. And yet they don't believe me because somehow they don't believe what's inside of them. And from the very beginning, because I knew that I was just, you know, the ideas and what I wanted to do, I said from the very beginning, I have to honor the gift that God's put in me. And it's not about money. It has never been about money. And there's been so many people who have said, go out and get a job. You know, and I said, I've got a job.
Oh, yeah.
I'm working for the Lord here, and somehow I just knew I had to honor that gift. Sometimes it takes years down the way for that fruition to come, you know, full circle. But definitely it has come in my life, and I am so thankful that I look back. I've done everything in the art world and in the writer's world, too, where I've been. And that's why I reach out to other creative people, because usually artists they're very sensitive, and they get their feelings hurt. They wear their hearts on their sleeve. There's a lot of things going on here, and they can get shot down very easily. And I said, you know, if you're a mathematician, 1 + 1 = 2, but in the art world, an artist, if you look at their art, you'll say, well, it's good or bad, but they don't have a measuring stick to that. Kind of like, well, I hope my art is good. And then it's kind of like, well, if someone pays for it and pays a big price, then it's got to be good. Well, that's not so. It's all in the marketing. And it's in that person building someone up to say, this is wonderful, and maybe it's just a spot on a blank canvas. So there's a lot of things. You're measuring yourself with each other. And then in the Christian world, when I started in 1965 as an artist, the church did not know what to do with me. They said, well, you can work on the bulletin boards. That was probably my job. But I loved the word, and so I couldn't get enough of the word. And so I've been teaching, you know, Sunday school, Bible studies for years and years. And today, you know, I just am so thankful that all that word is in me. God's designed, you know, my steps and I've walked in them.
Well, it sounds like you have been on quite a journey, Betty, and you have also, despite some reservations at times, you have also followed God's call. And of course, that's always a blessing, even though people don't always see it at the moment. It is definitely a blessing to have people like you out there who, should I say, stand kind of above and beyond what is expected. So I wanted to congratulate you on just continuing with the battle, making yourself heard.
Yes, yes, yes. And
most
you know what?
Definitely.
It's inside of you. When God puts that Holy Spirit and he puts that gift, that creative gift in you, it moves you forward. And have I ever thought of quitting? Never. I've never, mm-hmm. you know, and somehow it's like, I just have to do this no matter what. Just, I got to do it. And everything, even today, you know, I'm thinking, everything I'm learning, why didn't I learn that back in the 20 or 30 years ago? But it's always a new place. When you're walking with the Lord, he's always giving you new information and new revelation.
That's true, Betty. And I think that the Lord also knows at what point in our lives we are going to be the most likely to absorb a certain lesson. A lesson that is offered at age 25 may not be received near as clearly or as well as a lesson that is received at age 55 because of the life experiences as his children have been through in that 30-year period. And I have found that to be very true.
It is. In fact, I want to challenge your audience today with some of that information. But it's so true. He's building, you know, what we're evolving constantly into a new revelation, a new way of looking at things. If you walk with the Lord, years ago, the Lord said, you either walk with the church or you walk with me. And I thought that was, oh, my goodness. Now, this is back in the 70s, and I'm a church person, you know.
I'm sure.
That was a hard place, and it was kind of like, no, I got to walk with you because the church I was in was not walking with him. But I was so young in the Lord, but there was something in me that I have to walk with him no matter, you know, no matter what I know or what I don't know. But you just never quit because you're always learning.
Exactly. Yes. Betty, how do you manifest your faith through your artwork? What kind of things do you paint? And I'm just going to throw this out. Is there a place, maybe a website, where folks can go and get a sample of some of your artwork or places where it can be seen?
You know, since I have been writing for the last 20 years, I've kind of laid my art aside. I was painting characters for my books and stuff like that. But you really can't wear both hats very well. So, but how my faith is manifested through my artwork. I owned a gallery in Albuquerque in 1990, and I was prophesied over in 1993. And a woman came into my gallery in Albuquerque and told me the Lord had something he wanted me to know. She said that I was an open portal for Christians to get their work out into the marketplace. I took it then. I included Christians to hang in their art in my gallery and, you know, to display and sell. So I kind of felt like, I'm exposing their faith and their light to the secular market, and it's a way for them to be seen. But then that prophecy was much more than that when I was in 1993, because that's where I was. And today, what I see, I understand how much more that prophecy meant. I started a weekly column in our Sun newspaper in 2008, and I called it A Matter of Faith. I opened a door for writers to write about their faith. I was able to open that door and then start, you know, soliciting articles from all these writers in different places. And also in 2008, I also have a weekly column about called The Artist Lane. I've written over 600 articles for the newspaper, and I tell my faith, and, you know, I use everyday stories with humor. The Sun newspaper lets me write anything I want. I talk about Jesus when it fits. If if I started that article today, it would not be received because of the of where we are as Christians in the secular world. But
yes,
what has happened over the last 15 years, that my readers base has grown to the point where I just talk about the Lord, and I don't preach. I don't, you know, it's like I'm just, and I use it in stories and things that I do. So I've always had an open door understanding. I don't know how to even explain it. It's like I start things. I'm consumed with, oh, this would be a great idea. For 21 years, from 1986 to 2007, I conducted Christian artists and writers retreats every year here in Pagosa Springs. I had Christian writers and artists come and bring their creative gifts. You know, I was giving them a platform because I said, there's no place to show. You know, it's hard to get into galleries here, and this is a way that you can come. I had, you know, all kind of creative people. They wrote songs, they sang, they played the piano, they painted, they wrote. I had teachers come, and then I always had a spiritual time because I always wanted that spiritual level to come into these. And at the time, again, you know, God puts me in places that I've never had a clear path. And I kept saying, what am I doing? You know, a lot of work. I worked all year just getting ready for these retreats.
And
is anything happening? Am I doing anything spiritually good for the kingdom? At the time, it didn't feel that way, but everybody just kept coming back. I'd have maybe 30 to 50 people in a long weekend. It wasn't until about, 20, 30 years later that they were saying, oh, they were the most spiritual times. You know, it meant so much. And every year it became a reunion because the same people came back. We saw each other grow. And it'd be like, you know, when they said that, you know, someone in the audience or someone that was there attending would say something, and another one would say, you know, I heard you say that 20 years ago, and I started my path on that. I changed my mind of thinking or whatever. So it might be years before you see the fruition. I kept saying, God, what am I doing? And you know, why isn't there an example or something out there that I could run formatted or whatever? And it was like, when it's spirit, you know, it's like, it's not about, oh, how something is. It's what comes from above. He is directing you, and so he directed me through all of that. So when you ask how my faith was manifest in my artwork, it was like I always had an ear to the other artists and writers in the group because I knew what I had already been through. That's probably it's always been about the Lord and what is happening in the spirit realm for the kingdom.
You know, Betty, that to me is one of the rewarding and yet one of the frustrating things about our faith, in the sense that we being humans the way we are, we tend to want immediate reward. You want all these great reviews, like if you write a book, but it doesn't happen. But the rewarding thing, that's the frustrating part. But the rewarding part is that 5 years from now, someone may say, you know, you remember when you talked to me in the grocery store that day about your church or whatever? That really impacted me. And we may never know for years and years what kind of an influence some little thing we said, something we wrote, something you painted has on a person. And they say that we won't know until we'll probably be shocked when we get to heaven to see the number of people that some little thing that we said or did has had a positive influence on their life. So to me, that's the kind of an exciting thing about our faith, because it's an unknown to a degree. So that's my take on it.
In the spirit, it almost doesn't feed through the intellect, because it's like they'll say, well, you led me to the Lord. And I'll say, oh, that's right. I forgot. Or remember when you said that or whatever. And it's like, oh, I forgot that. But
a lot
of my articles I write, it's like they'll say, oh, I love that article, you know, 2 weeks ago. And I'll say, what was that about? You know, because it's like God takes you into a different place when you're writing spirit things. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yes. We'll take a break here, where I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light with host Patty Sheen here on Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is Betty Slade, an artist, columnist, and writer. Her novel is titled Taming Wild Hearts, which recently released a couple of months ago. If you would like to listen to this episode again or hopefully refer it to friends and family, it is on archive. The most current 5 episodes can be found on the homepage at pattysheen.com. That is spelled PATTISHENE.com. The Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page will give you access to archived episodes. Under each episode is a more information tab that provides links to guest websites, social media, and other resource information. Let's return to our interview with Betty. Well, let's move into, Betty, your writing. When did you begin writing, and what circumstances encouraged you to do so?
Well, I always, you know, I think if I went back and had my life over, I probably would have started writing when I was 16, because I really loved my my literature teacher, loved her, Mrs. Johnson, way back when. But, you know, I was, way back then, the arts was not really an issue for anyone. You just needed to go to business school and get a degree or go to college. So, but I, being an artist for 45 years, in 1993, I became a serious writer. And I remember then everybody said, you've got an identity crisis going on here. Everybody knows you as an artist, but now you want to be a writer. And I said, well, I've always wanted to write. Because I studied the Bible and I loved the Word so much. I wanted everybody to love the Word. So my first attempt was a fiction based on actual events on Mary Magdalene, and that was my first novel. There were like 8 verses in the whole Bible about Mary Magdalene, but I wrote a whole 70,000-word novel about it. That was the beginning. And then I wrote Bible study books on the Song of Solomon, on Ruth, on you know, different books that I taught, and I thought, oh, my goodness, this is so wonderful. I got to teach it. So that's where I started.
And the rest is history. You've been writing ever since.
Yeah. And that's where I am today.
Yes. Well, your book, your novel, Taming Wild Hearts, released here a few weeks ago. Give us a short summary of that story. Tell us enough to where the listeners will want to buy it, but don't tell us so much that we learn the whole story.
Okay, it's a Western romance. It's contemporary, country family in the heart of the Rocky Mountains. And I love country families. We live in the country, and I love strong country families who work hard, they have strong values. And so that's kind of where the book came out of. And then, I'm sure you know it because you're over in that neck of the woods, the Four Corners area.
Betty? You got me wrong. I'm on the other side of the state. I'm over in the plains. I'm in southeastern Colorado.
Oh, really? I thought yes. You were in the Four Corners area. Okay. Well, living in the Four Corners, right up from Cortez, Dove Creek is the Disappointment Valley. And nothing grows there or lives there except for the Mustangs and the tarantulas. It's just dry and just a dry, desolate valley. So anyway, I thought, I think I'll take that the horse, a Mustang, from the Disappointment Valley, and I set up a metaphor with Bree. She's one of my protagonists, and she's lived off the streets, and so she's coming from that place where almost a throwaway, like a Mustang, where no one, you know, wants her or anything. She got into the foster home. Anyway, she witnesses a murder. And she is running from the syndicate in San Francisco, and she had heard that there is a man in Colorado, Joe Crawford, that could help her if she could get there. So she hitchhikes to the Rocky Mountains, to this family, Crawford family ranch. She meets there Luke, who is a modern-day cowboy, and he rescues a rare curly sulfur Mustang from poachers in Disappointment Valley, Colorado. So he and Bree joins the efforts of a doctor working to save the curly Mustang Bree from extinction. And the whole, you can't believe it, but this doctor was on the front page of the Sun News probably about 4 years ago about he is trying to save the curly sulfur Mustang. So I reached out to him and I said, you know, I might be able to use the curly sulfur Mustang because Pagosa is kind of like ground zero for this breed where there's only three left in the world. And he was a scientist and a historian. And so I had really rich background information that was very authentic that I could use. This is kind of where this story is, and then there's a romance. They're pursuing this line of curly sulfur Mustangs, and that's kind of where everything goes.
And I really like the analogy between Bree and these curly sulfur Mustangs, which I did not even know existed. To be honest, Betty, I did not even know the Disappointment Valley existed, and I've lived in Colorado for 50 years. So I looked it up.
I thought, I don't think anybody believes me. And so I was passing through, and I took a picture of this green sign that says Disappointment Valley, and I thought, you know, there's a story here because it's, you know, people come from disappointing places. She came from the streets of San Francisco. And I thought, you know, people have these hard backgrounds that they come out of. And her whole thing was a trust issue, which was also the horse's problem was, you know, a trust. He'd never seen a human before or seen it but not touched it or anything. And Luke is in love with the Mustangs, and he's in love with Bree. But she has trust issues. And, you know, I think the redeeming, you know, spiritual redemption is that the trust out of love, that someone needs to love someone enough that they can trust them to be able to deal with some of these things and what they've been through.
I looked up and I thought, oh, wow, that is really a cool name for a fictitious valley. And then I looked it up and I thought, oh, it's not fictitious, it's real. So I thought that was pretty neat. I had never heard of it before. But, yeah, I really enjoyed the analogy that you used throughout that story, Betty. And I'm my goodness, I could talk about this all day. I'm a huge Westerns fan of the old Westerns, and I like to write historical and contemporary Westerns. So your story really caught my attention. And, of course, Luke was the dream cowboy, you know, that anybody who likes cowboys would envision. So I enjoyed your book. I'm sure that
it was like he came from a Bible-thumping grandmother and a very five-generation, you know, family and Christian family. And she comes off the street and she knows nothing about God. She hasn't heard anything about that. So the two cultures are coming together and, you know, how that works. The grandmother definitely wanted him to marry a Sunday school girl.
Definitely.
You know, he comes with a tattoo and things like that. So, you know, the grandmother's like 70 years old. So that's a whole different generation of looking at someone that's been out there and lived life. And yet she had the depth and the adventurous spirit where Luke, who's on the property, I mean, he needs to learn how to fly like a butterfly. And, you know, he's crawling like a caterpillar, so to speak. And so, you know, bringing the two together and building that relationship. And it was so fun. I fell in love with every one of them, especially Uncle Charlie. Everybody said, Uncle Charlie's my favorite personality. I said, I know. And yes. I thought, I'm going to write a book about Uncle Charlie, but you know what? He's a sidekick, and a little of him goes a long way. So I'm going to keep it in Bree and Luke's point of view for the next book.
We hadn't addressed that before, but this is going to be a series. You've got more than one book planned for this particular setting and these particular characters.
And I've already got about 20 chapters on the second book, and it's going to be called, The Land Grabbers is a working title, but what they're doing is taking all this land over there on the west side of Colorado. They're all taking this land from the Mustangs because they need it for the cattle and all that. So they're getting rid of those Mustangs, and it's a big thing because it's a big market. They can sell those hides. They skin the horses mm-hmm. and sell the hides, and they've got lots of things going on here. That second book is all going to be about saving the land for the Mustangs. A little different twist in the second book.
A little different take, yeah. Very interesting. Well, Betty, in the decades that you have spent working in the art world and in the writing world, what have you learned about God in the process of developing and perfecting your creative abilities?
Well, years ago, as I was coming into a freer walk with the Lord, I noticed my art became freer. You know, just it's amazing how there was just a freedom in my art, and just in maybe just going from the religious piece of art to a more impressionistic, more life-giving art. And I saw a difference in my art changing as I changed as a believer, because we started in a very, very strong religious church, a lot of law, that type of thing. And as I started shedding all those laws over the years and the rules and just walking with the Lord in a free, what he wants us to do, then I saw a difference in my writing or in my art. And I've said that to the writers, the more I write now because of where I am walking with the Lord, there's life in my words and the Spirit is there. And people will say, I couldn't put the book down. I could feel this and that, and I'm thinking, wow, that wouldn't have happened years ago because mm-hmm. I was too hung up in the religious walk. But as the Holy Spirit has really got a hold of me over the many years, and I mean, it's been a process. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a real process to get here, and I know that my words sing. I know they do because of the response I'm getting from readers.
You remind me of a gentleman I've had on the show a couple of times, Alan Arnold. He talks about creating with God. Let God speak to you and create through him. And I love that concept because it is so much more freeing. You want to create your best for him, but if you allow him to be a part of that creative process, it is just so much more rich and meaningful. And I think you've shared that with us today, Betty. And is there anything else that you would like to bring up that we didn't particularly mention?
Well, I'd like to leave a challenge for your audience.
Great.
In our writers group each week, I bring a five-minute challenge, and we meet every Monday morning, and we have between 20 and 30 people. My desire for this writers group is to move the group spiritually in their writing, and so I challenge them to dig deeper, when they write, take off the veil so others, and that's how people touch you, touch your writing, touch the pain in the heart is when you take off that veil. So many people are so afraid to show themselves, but the reader will go only as deep as that writer goes. It's a process, but I told them years ago, I got a hold of that scripture that says, no longer I live, but Christ lives in me. And I said, when the Lord asked me to write something, I write it knowing it's from him, and whatever, however deep he takes me, it's okay, whatever the outcome. That's really important, that deep calls to deep. But I'm going to leave this statement with your writers because I absolutely love this. Enlightenment is like the light shining in the window from the other side of the room. I brought that to the group a couple weeks ago. The enlightenment is like the light shining in the window from the other side of the room. And I told them that the enlightenment is revelation knowledge that comes from heaven to the Spirit. It's light that is unveiled from the Lord. Enlightenment is revelation. Natural light comes to the flesh through the intellect, and it's like turning on a light bulb in the room. But in years past, I've had a lot of fleshly ideas, a lot of light bulb moments, ideas, and I painted on everything and everything, and I made a lot of noise. And I told them, I said, today I come with a blank canvas. When I sit down to write that article every week for the newspaper, and when I bring that five-minute challenge to them, I start just with a blank canvas. My mind doesn't have anything to write about unless I hear from the Lord. I don't want to make any more noise. I want that pure light to whoever reads my, come to whoever reads my work. These lights are different. One touches their senses and the other touches their spirit. What does that mean? For the audience out there, for writers, how close will their words bring their writers to the light without being preachy or quoting scripture? I told my husband that we haven't stepped into the other room physically, but we have received revelation knowledge, heaven's wisdom. This is revealed knowledge from God in an earthly situation. And when we first came to the light, we saw the light. We were on the other side of the room. Now we've moved closer to the window. When it says enlightenment is like the light shining in the window from the other side of the room, it's like I'm understanding so much more deeper just the whole, the Christian walk and the God's heart more than anything, learning about his heart. And, you know, we're getting older, and when we first got saved, we were definitely on the other side of the room. We knew, absolutely knew nothing. And over the years, we've moved closer to the window, and he is giving us enlightenment, that revelation knowledge that only comes from walking with him for years. I keep telling him, wait on the Lord and hear the message he wants you to write. Then write it. We're messenger. We're messengers, and we are message carriers through our writing. If they want to make a difference in their writing to the world, in any of their any form of creative work that they're working with, the light will make that difference. But they have to truly get sold out to the Lord if they want to make a difference. There's so much noise. There's so much stuff out there that people are being led astray. It even says believers will be led astray in the last days. And it's like, my goodness, why? Well, it's because they've got to understand that what they're getting out of heaven is totally different. It's a different path than what they're walking today. And I don't mean walking today, but what they're learning in many places is that when you walk with God, it is different. It is a different place.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Betty, and for coming on the show today and talking with us. And it's been a real pleasure to visit with you. And may God continue to bless you in your ministry, whether it be your artwork or your writing or whatever else the Lord assigns you to pursue.
Thank you. Thank you.
Listeners, in closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered. Thank you so much for listening today. If you would like to listen to this show again, it is on archive. Go to my website, which is pattysheene.com. That's spelled PATTISHEENE.com. The most current 5 episodes are found right on the home page. You'll find the Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page. Click on that. It will give you a link to all the shows we have aired to date. Under each show is a more information tab. Click on that, and you will find more information about our guests, such as website and social media contacts. I can also be found on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Pinterest as Patty Sheene. Until next time, God bless you.